Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 381. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Just pen an email and send it on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay. Like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have such a great show for you this week. Let me introduce our guest. Rolla Selbach is an award-winning filmmaker whose credits include the internationally acclaimed feature film Three Veils, a first of its kind to confront the delicate subject matters of arranged marriage, homosexuality, and love within the Muslim American subculture. Rolla is also the creator of the virally popular web series Kiss Her, I'm Famous. That is just brilliant stuff. I hope you guys have seen it. Through the San Francisco Women's Film Institute leadership team, Rolla has been involved in initiatives specifically geared towards nurturing a generation of young female filmmakers. She is also the creator and the host of Girls Guide to Filmmaking, where she has interviewed a ton of the most influential women in the film industry. And now she is here with us. Rolla, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Hey, thank you for having me. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Always, always happy to be here with you.
We put some space between these interviews. I haven't chatted with you in a year and a half.
I know. Can you believe it's been that long? And so much has changed.
So much has changed. We're going to get to all that. But first, remind our listening audience, what does Rolla Selbach bring to the world of film?
Well, hopefully I bring thought-provoking subjects. Hopefully I bring kind of mind-stretching issues, and hopefully I bring points of view and characters that people haven't seen before or people haven't empathized with before to the screen that make people think twice or feel for a character or a situation that they may have never even thought about before.
Now, I'm not going to, but would it be okay with you if I went back and edited out all the hopefullies? Because you do all of those things.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, well, thank you for saying that. I think that any filmmaker would be humbled to hear that they've been successful at doing that. So I do appreciate you saying that. I do say hopefully because, you know, I don't want to be myopic and unaware and think that, you know, that I can't keep improving and can't keep making things better and better. So I do think that that's something I'm very hopeful about. And, you know, sometimes people connect and sometimes people are a little more obstinate or cynical. And you know, my goal is to break through all that. So thank you for saying that. I appreciate it.
Oh, I'm happy to. I have Three Veils sitting in my hand right now. It's I just watched it with one of my classes, which we're going to talk about how you were in my class all semester long. We'll get to that. What are Rolla Selbach's go-to films? Give me one that we know of, and then give our listening audience one that we don't know of that we should definitely check out.
Oh, well, I just one of the top of mind right now. I just saw La La Land, and I'm completely blown away. I was just speechless. It's just if for anyone who hasn't seen it yet, I think it just came out. Full theatrical release this weekend, but you have to see this movie. It's, speaking of hope, it's about dreamers who dream and dreamers who hope that the world can be a better place for themselves. But it's not schmaltzy, it's not hammy, it's very self-aware. It's a musical, and it's just so creative and so fresh. It's by the director, Damien, who directed Whiplash, wrote and directed Whiplash, which was also kind of a Oscar darling last year. So
yeah.
It's I can't say enough great things about it. It's just completely blown me away.
I can't wait.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, you're just gonna flip. You it's just I don't know. Yeah, I can't wait to talk about it with you once you watch it. And then as far as a film that's a little more obscure that people may not know about, it's kind of a film that really changed my life, both as an audience member and as a filmmaker, is Fire. It's a movie, I think, from 1996. And it's an Indian film, actually. And it was the first first non-American lesbian-themed film that I had ever seen in my life, and it was just so delicate and so beautiful. And it's essentially about these two women who are married, but they fall in love with each other, and it's just the most tender, most real, and most beautiful movie. It's just such a gem. It's by written and directed by Deepa Mehta, who also did Earth and a few other movies. So and Water and a few other things. So I would say Fire. It just absolutely changed. It just made me want to make. So
okay, all right. It begs a question, by the way, with La La Land. When is Rolla Selback making a musical?
Yeah, don't you know? I'm turning A Day with a Muslim into a musical.
I want a part in that so badly. I want to be, and I'm ruining this for our audience because we're going to get to this in a little bit. I want to be the guy who disappears halfway through because we're all kind of curious about that guy.
Oh, sure. Okay.
We'll get there. Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
By the way, we have to talk about, for folks who have not heard of American Paradise, tell our listening audience about American Paradise. Exciting stuff there.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we just got word. So I'm part of the, I'm a co-producer on the short film American Paradise, which is a companion piece to the feature film that I'm also part of the producing team for called The Last Black Man in San Francisco. And so American Paradise is a short film that kind of reimagines a certain tale and a certain story under Trump's New America. And it's extremely, it's actually based on a true story, which is even more absurd. I won't get into the details. You'll have to watch it when it comes out. But yeah, so we just found out that it got accepted into Sundance for 2017. So we'll be going to Sundance in January with it. And, you know, fun fact, this is the first Sundance film that I've been a part of. So that's also exciting.
That is so exciting. Now, I don't know if you know this. Sundance is actually a big deal, Rolla.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a little bit. I kind of have to pretend that I'm not freaking out in my mind, but the truth is that I'm freaking out in my mind. So it's pretty phenomenal, and I'm very humbled to have been a part of it. So
exciting. Such exciting stuff. I said in your intro about your work with the San Francisco Women's Film Institute leadership team and being involved in efforts to nurture a generation of young female filmmakers. In perhaps the most general question I could put out there to you, how is that going and what more can we do?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, Scarlett Shepard, she heads a Women's Film Institute there in San Francisco, and she's just been doing phenomenal things. I think as far as what we can do, you know, I would say, you know, and I know this is going to sound, you know, maybe idealistic or whatnot, but I really do think that it's up to us who are storytellers, who have the tools, who have been in this business or been in this industry for, you know, for a while, to take those, especially those voices who may not have had a chance before, take those voices under our wings. It really is our responsibility, especially for young women and for girls. You know, I mean, the numbers continue to be staggering, you know, as far as, you know, the low rates of women hired in Hollywood. And to be completely honest, I've kind of given up on Hollywood. And I think it's up to us to really elevate the voices within independent cinema and within independent film and TV. So it's something that I'm so absolutely passionate about. And the other thing is that I really get irked when folks say, you know, the excuse like, oh, the reason why, you know, we didn't peg a woman to direct this TV show or, you know, to direct this movie is because, oh, there just aren't any women out there doing, you know, doing this. And that's so not true. It's so not true. There are so many women hungry, you know, to be writers, to be directors. They just need to be given the tools, and they just need someone to kind of squeak that door open for them, and they will do the rest. And that's really what I've found so far. So it really, really, really means a lot to me. Really means a lot to me.
So we're not feeling too great about Hollywood these days.
No, we're not. I've kind of given up on that. And to be honest, I don't even know that it matters anymore. I feel like there's so many, like for instance, what Ryan Murphy, the breakthrough that Ryan Murphy and Ava DuVernay and so many people who are in positions to be able to hire fantastic talent that may not seem, you know, that aren't just the run of the mill straight male. They have done just phenomenal work as showrunners and as film and TV leaders. So I know, and that's my point. My point is it's really up to us to lift those talents up because, you know, no one else is. So
I would have to imagine that while the numbers of women directing this content in Hollywood is small, that women of color, that's got to be even a smaller number.
Yeah, of course. Of course it is. And one would think, you know, one would think we're just kind of tired of seeing the same protagonists, the same heroes, the same, you know, one would think that we're kind of tired of it. But until the audiences really stand up and demand that they see something different, Hollywood's just going to churn the same old things that seem to work. Because why wouldn't they, right? They're making money that way. But I actually do see positive trends on Hollywood. I don't want to sound, you know, like some sort of, you know, grinchy cynic. But like, for instance, who was it that directed the movie that was supposed to be about Moses and the Pharaohs, and then he just basically hired a bunch of white people instead of...
Oh, no, I just always assume it's the Stonewall guy who hired straight people. That's my default.
Yeah, exactly. Either way, my whole point is there have been a lot of instances. There have been a few instances of kind of disingenuous casting that kind of audiences decide, or even the Bruce Lee movie where they made, you know, the protagonist the white guy instead of Bruce Lee himself. Like there have been some recent cases where audiences have been like, you know what, nope, not really that interested.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's slowly happening, and I do think that. You know, with really popular shows like, you know, like Empire and and many even network television shows that people didn't even think would really hit with the mainstream audiences have proved folks wrong, and now people are just clamoring to, you know, to do the next Empire, for example. So there's some promising things.
We like promising. And one of the things that people can do is create their own content. And you have certainly done that. Again, listening audience, we are here with Rolla Selback, award-winning filmmaker. So let me set the stage for you of what happened. Gosh, it was only 2 weeks ago. So I'm coming to the end of the semester. Two of my undergraduate courses are called Actually Talking Race. They used to be called Talking Race, but people weren't speaking. So I renamed them Actually Talking Race to convey you actually need to talk in this course. And it's worked. So we're doing okay with that. So I wanted to do at least a couple sessions talking about Muslim identity. We've spent most of the semester. I mean, by the way, what a semester to talk about race. It's been almost staggering. But we spend much of our time talking about black and white and delving, doing a deep dive there. And I certainly wanted to spend time talking about Muslim identity. And of course, my millennial students, or I don't even know what generation they are now, they very much enjoy a nice YouTube video. So I'm searching around thinking, all right, what can I use to get people talking straight away? And up pops a video. I don't know if you know this. It's called Trump Supporters Spend a Day with a Muslim. So I look at the little tagline of who created the video, and I not only know this woman, but she's on the show right this very second. This is very exciting stuff. So I want to walk through all of this because we're talking, listening audience, about an intensely viral video that had great effects, not just on my classroom, but on me, someone who teaches this content all the time, which we'll get to. But first, where did Trump supporters spend a day with a Muslim come from?
Yeah, well, first of all, I love that you happed upon the content without even knowing that it was me who actually created it. I think that's pretty special.
I'm so sorry, and I feel really bad almost saying that. I apparently missed this entirely. I don't know where I was when this happened.
No.
So it was such a pleasant surprise. Yeah.
No, I'm being completely serious. I love the fact that you were in a class that's talking about exactly what I wanted to tackle.
Yeah.
And that you went to the internet and that you found the video. I'm actually being completely serious.
Yeah.
I actually love that.
It was just the most pleasant surprise. But go ahead. Yes. Where did this come from?
Yes. So the concept was, I really wanted to bring people, unlikely groups of people together to spend a day with a Muslim and see, you know, if at the end of spending a day with an actually Muslim person, if their minds or if their heart changed at all. And the concept came about from, I really had this hypothesis that it's very easy, especially in this age of the internet, you know, in echo chambers and whatnot, it's very easy to, A, never meet a person that you are continuously judging, and B, it's just very easy to be disconnected from that person that you're judging because you're on the internet. So you could just say whatever you want
right.
with no consequence. And because of that, you kind of self-perpetuate that opinion and that judgment, and it just keeps getting louder and louder and worse and worse. So my theory was, you know what? I don't know that a person could be so heartless and so unempathetic that when they actually meet the person that they're judging and spend a day with them, genuinely, I can't imagine that something won't change inside them. Maybe they won't change their mind fully, maybe, you know. And so, but at least they'll be able to connect with the humanity that they both share. And
right.
that was my hypothesis. I had no clue if it would work. I didn't know what to expect. It was, you want me to be honest, I mean, it was my own judgment of what a Trump supporter was. I was scared. I mean, I don't know if I can swear on the show.
Go for it.
Yeah, I was scared.
Yeah.
I'll be honest. You see these on TV, you see these Trump rallies and punching and violence and hate speech and all. And so when I put a call out, I did not know what to expect. And so I myself was part of the experiment because I didn't know how it would go. It's not like I actually prepped these people or had an idea. So that originally was the idea, is that I would bring unlikely groups of people together to spend a day with a Muslim, because it seems like such a misunderstood subgroup, especially
yeah.
in the United States, and see what happens. So I started with Trump supporters. And actually, the second episode that I am editing right now is LA Gays Spend a Day with a Muslim.
Look at that.
Yeah. So I'm almost done with that one, putting the finishing touches. So hopefully that one will also be eye-opening and heart-changing.
Now, I referenced this earlier. You start out with two participants, and then my class, because I showed this in, I have two sections of Actually Talking Race, and both sections had the same question, and I think they even came up with some hashtags of, where'd the second Trump supporter go?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I wish that there was more mystery to it. But the truth is that he just he didn't have time to
okay.
stay.
Okay, that's not what we came up with.
I know. And in retrospect, I should have maybe added that bit in the voice, like added additional voiceover to say like, oh, he couldn't stay because, you know, the truth is that the Trump supporters didn't know what they were getting into.
Yeah.
They originally thought that they were going to be interviewed about why they're voting for Trump. So they knew that part. They knew that much. But they did not know that they were going to spend a day with a Muslim. They didn't know they were going to eat, you know, at a Muslim restaurant. They didn't know they were going to go to a Muslim person's house. They had no clue. So they had only scheduled, a certain amount of time. So that's the truth.
We came up with way better explanations, which I'll tell you about off the air, but they were pretty darn exciting. Right at the start of the video is an act of bravery, particularly given the context that you've just outlined, where these two gentlemen are in your car and it comes to light, as you said, that they don't even know that you are a Muslim. And there is the most beautiful awkward silence, and we're all thinking awkward, and then your commentary comes on saying it was awkward, and it was perfect because that's what we were feeling.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was feeling.
Yeah, a little bit.
And the truth is that I felt like a little safer because I was the one driving. I'm like, the worst they can do is just open the door and like drop out.
Right.
I think I'd be a little more nervous if one of them was driving. But yeah, it's interesting because it also shows that they didn't know all along that they were talking to a Muslim. And, you know, even when I asked, hey, do you know someone who's Muslim? They're like, no. I'm like, well, you kind of do. It's me. So
right.
It's like, there's so many layers there. And I'm really glad I had the foresight to actually turn my iPhone on. That wasn't even like, you know, one of the dash cams or anything. I literally decided to turn on my iPhone on and start recording.
Kudos to your friend, by the way, for opening up his home, because that's not something everyone would do. And I think that was a key piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. Yeah, I'm sure he'd appreciate that. I mean, I think that what you see is that kind of mind and heart stretching had to happen from both sides.
Right.
You know, and it's hard because through the video, you're kind of cringing and you're kind of like, oh, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And then all of a sudden you see this little kid like shake his hand. Like it's just kind of, you cannot help. You cannot help. And really, this was my theory is I feel that when you go to a person's home or when you're eating with someone and sharing, you know, sharing food and talking, and it's very, very difficult to keep that kind of aggressive judgment up when you are finally connecting with someone as a human. I really do truly believe that. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't mean that happens all of the time, but I'll tell you something, like even the Olive Tree restaurant, Alan from the Olive Tree restaurant, just one of the most genuinely beautiful human beings. I hadn't met him before. That was the first time I had met him. But he was so, you know, at first, of course, like everyone was, that I reached out to a bunch of restaurants and everyone was kind of skeptical.
Yeah. They're
like, what do you mean you're bringing a Trump supporter here? I'm like, well, you know, we want to have a conversation. Is it cool if, you know, he said, and it was really difficult. And then Alan, you know, he was, of course, as well, a little skeptical at first. He's like, well, what are you going to do with the video? We've had a lot of problems in the past. You know, of course, they've had a lot of hate crimes and hate speech happen to their restaurant. So I'm like, look, trust me. You know, I'm not going to do, I'm, this is my goal. My goal is to kind of open minds. And he's like, you know, I love that and I'm going to take a chance. So by the end of it, he actually gave not only me and the crew, but the Trump supporters and everyone who was involved all of that food that you saw, he just put it on the house.
Oh,
he
wow.
was just so thankful. I know. Can you believe that?
No. That looked really yeah. good.
Yeah. It was. It really was. And anyway, my whole point was he was so thankful that he himself also was able to have like an open and candid conversation with someone he himself would have never sat down with.
Right.
He was so happy and so thankful about it that he just put it all on the house and we all ate for free, which was so sweet, I thought.
I think that you could easily focus on one side of the equation, which we'll talk about in 1 second about the Trump supporters and the effect that it had on them. But it's impossible for this not to affect all people involved in the conversation. It can't just be one-sided. There really was a meeting of the minds here.
Yeah, yeah, I'd really like to think so. And it's interesting because a lot of folks now, you know, they ask me, they're like, oh, are you going to do a follow-up? Are you going to do a follow-up? And it's funny because I never thought about it before, but I'm like, yeah, maybe I should. Maybe I should see where they're at now.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I should see if they'll tell me who they voted for and how do they feel right now. I think a follow-up is definitely warranted.
How amazing would it be if that experience, you engineering this experience, turned that Trump supporter into a Jill Stein voter? That would be incredible. What if you did that? How are you going to feel about that? It's amazing. It's amazing. We actually came up with some blooper lines, too. This is what we were doing in class. We enjoyed it immensely. But at one point, when the gentleman asks, he's in the home, and he's asking, wait, are those prayers on the wall? We really wanted the homeowner to say, dude, those are from IKEA. I just wanted it to be something just to throw him off. There was a lot happening in class when this happened.
Oh my gosh, I wish I was in your class. No.
I know. We're getting you there.
It was like this mystery science theater-ish.
It was great. It was great.
Commentary.
Well, so at some point you had to have realized, oh, this is going really viral.
Oh my gosh, you don't even know.
Tell me.
You don't even know. Okay, here's the truth. The truth is that it's actually quite something. So I thought, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to post this on Facebook. I had never posted a Facebook video before. That I meant as part of my work, right? Like, of course, I posted my own personal videos, but
sure.
I never publicly posted something that was, okay, this is an episode of a docuseries I'm launching, blah, blah, blah. So So at first, so it was my first foray into it, and I'm like, okay, well, Facebook seems to work because, you know, I know a lot of people, and at least if they watch it once, it might help, and then they'll share it. Like, I thought it was a more shareable platform than YouTube has been in the past. And so I posted it on Facebook, and I put it on Vimeo. And, you know, I definitely got views. Like, I got about, like, 20K,
sure.
20K, 21K. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. That's the run, you know, like, experiment done, you know. And I totally, and I'm not joking, I'm completely being sincere here. I forgot that I posted it on YouTube. And I don't even know why I posted it on YouTube. I don't even remember if it was just kind of a, you know, safekeeping or you know, just to... I don't even remember why I did that. And it wasn't until a month or two later, I don't know how I came upon my own video. And I saw the staggering number. I think it's up to almost a million now.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I could not believe it. I my whole point is to say I really didn't do any kind of promo, any kind of PR, which, as you know, I didn't, because you would have known about
it. I would have known about it.
Right? Yeah. So I did no PR, no advertising, no nothing. I just kind of put it up there, and somehow it got found, and it just got passed around. So so I myself am extremely surprised by how viral it's gone, and, of course, very happily surprised. But yeah, it's not like I really did not plan it at all.
Well, it's incredible stuff. I have to tell you this. You know, the discipline that I teach is often under fire, and I suspect will be under fire even more in the oncoming years when you work in a discipline that's not maybe directly tied to a career. You know, it's not like, oh, okay, mm-hmm. you take these courses and you become a race scholar, right? It's not exactly mm-hmm. clear. And so my tangibles, my outcomes aren't always super easy to explain to people at the end of a semester when other faculty are like, so what did you actually do in there? And to have this video to point to say, this is what we did. This is what can actually happen when people talk about race. It doesn't mean that the guy woke up in the morning and he was a Trump supporter, and by the end of the day, you know, he wasn't anymore. That wasn't the goal. The fact that he was even pausing is the power of conversation, and maybe it means that now he's not going to be silent when a joke is told around him, and that in itself is huge, and you provided everyone, you bear witness to that pause, and that's it validated everything it is that I do in the classroom. I'm really not kidding. It was huge.
Oh, that means a lot. That means so much. That means so much for me to hear. That means so, so much for me to hear.
So it was, oh, right. This is what we do. So, okay. So this happens. So you make this video, and then there's this election, right? And there's this outcome to the election. And I actually went back on your Facebook timeline just to see. This isn't the thing I'm surprising you with. We'll get to that. But this is what you posted right after the election. You posted, in the end, what we found is that no one person can save us. All we have is each other. Talk to me about just kind of post-election. You're a queer woman. You are a Muslim woman. This America holds a lot of uncertainty for us in the next 4 years. How do you navigate a path forward?
Yeah, I mean, I get very... it's interesting. It's very hard for me to find words sometimes about... I'm not usually rendered speechless very often, and so it's really difficult. It's a really difficult time, I'll be honest. And I think that what's most heartbreaking is that I really do think that there's such a lack of empathy going around, and it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming, and I think that it's really hard to have your concerns and your fears belittled. And so when we're out in the streets, you know, worried about our rights, worried about the rights of our, you know, chosen family, of our actual family, of our friends and families, like when we're actually worried and concerned, you know, it really does hurt me that, you know, there's the voice on the other side so tritely saying, oh, you're sore losers. It's not about losing an election. It's about losing who we are as Americans and as humans. And it just saddens me that it saddens me that the other side doesn't see that.
Yeah.
And I want them to see that. And I don't know how to change it other than through my art. And that's really what I'm holding on to right now.
Yeah.
And what keeps me going and what keeps me pushing forward. I cannot sit here. I cannot sit here and will not sit here idly as the country that I've known, the country that adopted me, the country that saved me, disintegrates into its own inhumanity. I will not do that. I will fight for it. I'll fight for everything that we had.
Yeah.
And I will not let it slip.
And you surely know that I'm supporting you every step of the way, right?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. That means a lot. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you
for so much
that.
More content to come. So in one of the most awkward transitions in the 8-year history of the show, I came up with a game for us to play. Do you have time for a game?
You kill me, man. You kill me. You put me in such a good mood. It's unbelievable. Yes,
just wait.
I love games.
Just
yes.
Wait. So let me remind our listening audience, this is Rolla's third time on our show. Previously, we have covered her star-winning turn as an orientation leader at Portland State University. We've talked about that. Previously, we have talked about such awards as the Home Products Group's Engineering Group Recognition Award, obviously, as you all know, for the development, the deployment of Blue River and all Yangtze demo, all the stuff we use every day. So there's that. We've covered this already. This is old information, Rolla. This should not affect you in such a way.
Oh, God. Okay.
So
what?
We're going to play a game, and I'm going to ask you 5 questions. And if you get, let's say, 3 out of 5, though I might change the rules if this proves too hard, I'm going to send you a This Show Is So Gay magnet. All right?
Okay, okay.
Right? This just got real. This is real stuff.
It just got real. Wait, sorry. 3 out of 5 is my...
Yes,
goal.
You need
like
to
if
get...
I get 2, I lose. 3, I win.
We'll see. I suspect you're going to win no matter what, but...
I need specifics, Ken. I need specific structure and games so I know how to... Okay, okay. Well, let's do it. Let's
seriously,
do it.
You weren't this intense about the Sundance thing, but the game for the magnet, this is real.
Dude, I'm competitive,
okay.
Man. I'm competitive. Okay,
yeah, that's... You might want to dial that down. All right, here we go. So I have pulled 5 questions, and I would like you to know that you owe me 9 minutes of my life that I spent watching a YouTube video about Rolla Selback's hand. I learned
what?
All about...
What are you talking about?
Oh, come on. You have to know this. That there's a video on YouTube of a woman analyzing your hand. You must know this. Do you not know this? This just became the greatest episode I've ever done of this show. You have no idea.
I don't know what you're saying.
Oh, this is the greatest thing that has... I think this might be our last show. I have all of these other shows booked, but I think this is pretty much it. I think I'm done with this episode if I have revealed this. You've no idea. 3 years ago, a woman by the name of Ronell Coburn did a YouTube video called Life Purpose Now. It's a hand analysis video of Rolla Selback's hand.
Okay, can I say something? I have no clue if you're kidding. Like, I don't...
I'm not.
That's part of the game.
No. This is a real thing, and this is the greatest. I'm linking to it on our website.
No!
It is... I can't...
Oh God, what are you doing?
It has 176 views.
Okay, well, that... is it me? Like, is it the first name? Like, maybe there's other people called Rolla, is my point.
My friend, I am looking at a picture of you right now. It says Rolla Selback, independent filmmaker, 3 veils, and it's got your handprint on there. This is the great... I'm telling you. Folks, if you're listening, if you've been listening to our show for 8 years, please know this is the last episode we will ever do because it's just not going to get better than this. This is the greatest thing.
I can't. I don't know.
You have no shot at winning this game. I assumed that of the 176 views, you were like 168 of them.
Why would I?
Oh my gosh.
Why would I look at a video about...
It's amazing. Let me read the description. Let me read the description. Renelle Coburn analyzes filmmaker Rolla Selbach's hands for life purpose and personality psychology on the Talk to the Hand show.
Stop.
It's real.
Stop, bro.
You used this woman. I'm going to tell you. Apparently, you used this woman for some sort of fundraising event, and then you sent her pictures of your hand, and she does a hand analysis of your hand. You really have no idea.
I really.
Oh, this is
really
the greatest thing.
I'm still borderline not believing you.
No, it's 100% real. The name of the video, everyone, and we will certainly be linking to it. It's called Life Purpose Now, Rolla Selbach Hand Analysis Video.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay. All right, I'm going to ask you five questions about your hand. You are not going to know any of them, and this is the greatest thing. You ready?
Okay.
I'm not kidding. I have so much free time now because this is our last episode. We were supposed to have Netta Ulaby from NPR on next week's show, but no longer.
Ooh.
This is it. This is it. All right.
This is it, huh?
Here we go. Question number one. And these are all multiple choice. I made it easier for you in case you didn't remember the video, which you've apparently never seen. Question number one. These are all quotes from the video.
Oh,
question number one. Rolla has a really blank looking hand. Here are your three options. Creative, messy, or orderly. Creative, messy, or orderly.
Well, certainly not orderly. And
okay.
I'm not messy. So if this person analyzed my hand correctly, I'd say creative.
I'm sorry. The correct answer was messy. The correct answer was messy.
Oh, God.
It's great. It's okay. It's okay. Keep in mind, you only need to get one right in order to win this game. I'm changing the rules.
Like, what if I hang up now? What'll happen?
I will call you back. I have your number. This is the greatest. Folks, this is what radio is made of. Here we go. Question number two. Rolla has a blank-shaped hand. Okay? Here are your three options. Water, fire, or earth.
Oh, my goodness. And these are the shapes of my hand?
Apparently, your hand connotes either water, fire, or earth.
Okay. Okay.
Go with your gut on this one.
Okay, earth.
Okay, go with your other gut on this one.
Water. I don't know.
The correct answer is fire. Keep in mind, you just need to get one right. That's all we're shooting for.
I don't know, man.
Question number three. Okay. Question number three. This is the most amazing thing I've ever done. I have a PhD, and this is the pinnacle of my life right now. Okay. Question number three.
Yes.
Rolla has a strong blank. Here are your three options. Lifeline, upper ring finger, or thumb. Lifeline, upper ring finger, or thumb. This is real. This is like legit real.
Ken, this is inexcusable.
Am I not wrong, by the way? Can we pause and say this is the best thing I've ever done on this show?
No,
certainly.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Okay. Go ahead. It doesn't get better. Go ahead.
I agree. You should go to Sundance.
Lifeline, upper ring finger, or thumb?
Thumb?
The correct answer was upper ring finger. Again, you just need to get one right.
Okay. Look, I'm going to
focus.
Okay.
Question four. Rolla is good at mass communication because she has a ring on her blank. Here are your three options. She has a ring on her, I'm not kidding, right mercury, left.
I don't even know what that is.
I can tell you after the show. Right mercury, left Orion, or central Venus. Right Mercury, left Orion, or central Venus. So think about maybe a hand on which you have previously worn a ring.
Okay, so right, left, and then, or a center thing?
Yes, a right Mercury, a left Orion, or a central Venus.
Okay, so I don't wear rings on my left hand.
Okay.
So I'm going to say it's
doing
either
well.
Right, I don't know which hand center is for.
And thus?
I don't know. Thus, I'll just say the right.
The right Mercury, is that your
thingy?
Answer? Yes.
That one, yeah.
The correct answer is right Mercury. You got it. You got it. Okay.
And that means I'm good at what? Communicating what?
It doesn't matter anymore. It was mass communication. That's really not the point. Okay. Last question. This has gone so far off the rails. It's wonderful. Blank is in Rolla's right hand. This is apparently what you're carrying in your right hand. Is it creative control, directorial intent, or public power?
Oh, Jesus.
Creative. You're holding it in your right hand. Just look at your right hand. What are you holding right now? Creative control, directorial intent, or public power?
Okay, creative control.
So close. But the correct answer was public power. Public power.
Wow.
It's the greatest thing. It is for folks who need to spend 9 minutes and 58 seconds. You can watch Life Purpose Now, Rolla Sellback Hand Analysis Video. I don't even think I can ever have you back on the show because I can't top this.
I can't be on your show because I'm embarrassed.
What are you talking about? You now know how to approach life. This is just helpful stuff. I will send you this link. It's brilliant. It's brilliant.
You're killing me, man.
All right. Well, I don't even know how I transition, but you got Sundance coming up. What else does our listening audience need to know about from you?
Yeah. So I have, I can't even focus right now. I got this. I just keep thinking.
You're going to Dubai. I'm here to help you.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Yes. Okay. Thanks. So I have a second episode of A Day with a Muslim coming out soon.
Nice.
That's the LA Gays Spend a Day with a Muslim. I have a TV show that I'm currently writing called Choke.
Wow.
And that's about a Muslim Syrian refugee who escapes to the U.S. and she fights for a new life in the world, the violent world of MMA fighting.
Yeah.
And then I'm writing a few other things, American Paradise and Sundance, of course the feature film that it's a companion piece to, Last Black Man in San Francisco, is still something that I'm working on as well. So lots of stuff going on.
Exciting. All right, listeners, this is what you need to do. You have to go to YouTube, and if you have not watched it yet, you absolutely, it's not that one. I'm encouraging people to watch Trump Supporters Spend a Day with a Muslim. You have to go to rollasellback.com. There's all great content on there. Look, I already told you that this content very much affected my academic outcomes, for which I am grateful. But there was also a moment, and I'm going to just speak very personally here. You know, I've been doing this show for so long, and I think sometimes, honestly, I do take it for granted. I love doing it, and I love getting to talk to such inspirational people, but I think sometimes I forget because I sit in the same place, and I do these interviews, and, you know, episode 381, it's been a while, and I needed that moment where I saw one of my guests out of the context with which I normally encounter them, doing incredible things in the world, to remind me, that's right, I have this great opportunity to talk to people who are actually making a difference. And you are one of those people. And I'm just so grateful for all the energy that you are putting out into the world.
Oh, thank you so much, Ken, man. I really, really appreciate it. And I appreciate, honestly, like what you do as well, and how you spread positivity, and how you spread, and how you nurture our souls. Honestly, I absolutely love your show. I'm a huge fan of you. And your students are very lucky to have you.
Well, thank you.
As a mentor. So.
Well, thank you. Again, listening audience, go check out Rolla. Her right Mercury is changing the world. Rolla, please keep doing what you're doing.
Okay, I will. I'm not coming on your show again.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have tons of time left on this week's episode, so let's get to all of the latest LGBTQ news that's out there right now. a church that got homophobic abuse for flying the rainbow flag, well, they have now responded by putting up a second pro-LGBT banner. The Community Christian Church in Tempe, Arizona, they have been proudly flying a pride flag for over a year without incident. However, last week, an angry Trump supporter entered the LGBT-inclusive church and screamed, this person screamed homophobic abuse at an administrator in the church office, and this individual demanded that the removal of the flag happen straight away. The church's pastor, Doug Bland, recalled on Facebook, quote, "The man was using inflammatory, graphic language about gay people and his righteous hatred for them. He threatened to pay people to protest in front of our church. He said that he was not above spreading lies about pedophilia in our church. He told an office administrator that if Hillary had won, he would have driven right on by, but since Trump won, he felt empowered to speak and act out because the country agrees with him." The administrator maintained her cool, but was obviously shaken by the encounter. She did a great job diffusing and not escalating the situation. Again, that's the church's pastor, Doug Bland, recalling the incident. Well, after taking some time to consider their response, the church decided the best course of action is to double down on equality. I love this. Pastor Bland has now added a purple banner to the church tower alongside the pride flag. The new banner bears the phrase, "Lovers in a Dangerous Time." Lovers in a dangerous time. In a new Facebook post, the pastor explained this, quote, "We are in a new and very uncertain political world, post-truth and post-civility. Some feel that they have been given permission to speak and act in hateful and cruel ways. Pray that there will be leaders in our community and our nation who will not tolerate hate, threats, and violence." Look at that. That's the Community Christian Church in Tempe, Arizona. Folks, by the way, don't just send a message when you disagree with something. I think it's great to use your voice. I think it's great to get your voice out there and write your letter to the editor, whatever it is that you need to do, write to your representatives, absolutely, but also write to people at the Community Christian Church in Tempe, Arizona to say, hey, well done. Thank you. Thank you for everything that you are doing. So there you go, the Community Christian Church in Tempe, Arizona. Another faith-based story, kind of. A Christian charity has claimed it is child abuse. It is child abuse to teach children about gender at schools. This is over in England. The comments come amid a debate about whether sex and relationship education should be made mandatory in schools in England and in Wales. The Daily Mail publication this week attacked Can I Tell You About Gender Diversity, a book created by the LGBT inclusion charity Educate and Celebrate to start conversations about gender diversity in the classroom or at home. The book is routinely used by schools as a resource to teach about trans people. Well, talk radio host Paul Ross, the brother of TV presenter Jonathan Ross, who gets in the news quite a bit over there in England, invited a representative from the anti-LGBT group Christian Concern to discuss the story. The representative said this, quote, "This is a sociological experiment that is trying to impose a political agenda onto children. It's a form of child abuse, actually, saying we want to confuse you about your gender. I feel sorry for people who do have these conditions, but we don't want more people confused this way." There you go. That's over in England. That would be an anti-LGBT charity saying, yes, it's child abuse to teach children about gender, to teach children about relationships, to teach children about how we interact with each other. So there you go. That's actually not child abuse. Just if anybody's listening and thinking, oh, I wonder if that's child abuse. It's not. I am telling you, it's not. A not-as-happy story back here in the States. Vandals broke into a queer youth center in Rhode Island this week and hung a noose from the ceiling. This is a queer youth center in Rhode Island. vandals broke in and hung a noose from the ceiling. The break-in was reported at the Providence Youth Student Movement in Providence, Rhode Island. The center runs Queer and Trans Thursdays, a space for LGBTQ youth of color and allies. According to New Now Next, two knives were stabbed into a table. Oh my gosh. Two knives were stabbed into a table while a noose was hung from a hook on the ceiling. The center's executive director, Sarath Swong, hit out at the vandals on Facebook, writing, quote, "Maybe it was a prank, but it is not funny. But I don't think it's a joke. I think we were sent a clear message. But here's our message back. F you. You will not intimidate us. You will not steer us away from our mission. You will never dampen our spirit. You have only motivated us even more. We will continue to fight for justice and defend our community, our families, and our people." There you go. Their website explains that they organize at the intersections of race, class, gender, and sexual orientation by centering youth, women, queer, and people of color leadership in our campaigns, our organization, and our community. They also mobilize queer Southeast Asian youth, families, and allies to build grassroots power and organize collectively for social justice. Again, I don't want you to be left thinking, oh my gosh, a noose and knives. So that's terrible, terrible. I want you to also hear this story and hear, oh my gosh, there are amazing people doing amazing things. Their Queer and Trans Thursdays create safe spaces for queer and trans people of color to advocate for themselves, to support their communities, and to organize for political empowerment and build community. We need to know that these horrible things are happening, but we also need to walk away emboldened knowing this work will go on, that there will be safe spaces for queer and trans people of color to advocate for themselves, to support their communities, to organize for political empowerment, and to build community. You have to walk away knowing, hey, that's happening as well. Now, you might not get that impression from some of our lawmakers. From some of our lawmakers, we now have this report that has found that state-level lawmakers are stepping up efforts to pass anti-LGBT legislation on a local level in 2017. The State Equality Index, which was released this week by the Human Rights Campaigns Foundation, reveals the slew of proposed state-level laws that would undermine existing discrimination protections for LGBT people, erode marital rights of legally married same-sex couples, target trans people, and limit cities passing their own equal rights ordinances. Over the past year, more than, how many would you say? 2? 20? 50? No, that would be more than 200 bills. More than 200 bills have been filed in state legislatures across the U.S. that would roll back LGBT equality measures or target people for discrimination. While the vast majority of bills were defeated, some laws rolling back LGBT protections did make it onto the statute books in Mississippi and North Carolina, though outrage over the latter in North Carolina did at least lead to the ousting of Governor Pat McCrory. Let me just say this. I haven't talked about this in a while. Fine, they didn't pass. So a majority of these bills did not pass. So you might walk away saying, all right, well, there you go. We're good. No. From my time in local office and everything that I know about politics, time is a finite resource. Time is a finite resource. If we are spending time on one thing, that actually does mean that we are not spending time on other things. We are not spending time on employment. We are not spending time on education, police, fire departments, libraries, museums, whatever it might be. If we are spending time defeating a bill, well, the legislative session is only so long. So you could walk away from a story like this thinking, all right, it's not so bad. We defeated most of them. No, we actually wasted time. And by the way, time actually is money for issues like this. We are spending a ton of taxpayers' money to defeat the more than 200 bills. By the way, we didn't defeat all of them. Some of them went through. But more than 200 bills introduced this past year in statewide legislative sessions. What a colossal waste of time. Colossal. And by the way, not to create equality, but to actually make sure that some rights are limited. That's what we're spending time on. That's what we're spending money on. So all those different issues that your legislators say to you, I'm so sorry. We wanted to get to that, but we simply did not have time. This is one of the reasons. It is a waste. it is an absolute waste. So we got to keep our eyes on that. And while we're working to defeat them, we also have to highlight to all of our allies out there, hey, guys, we're wasting time here. The economy will not fix itself. Schools will not get better. The roads will not be paved because we're wasting time on this. By the way, speaking of Pat McCrory, it's working out, it looks like, just fine for him. Donald Trump is reportedly planning to find a role in his administration for the outgoing governor of North Carolina, who was defeated after passing an anti-LGBT law. So it might work out fine for Pat McCrory. We'll see what kind of post he gets. It might not have anything to do with what it is that he has done, because what we're learning from the cabinet is that you don't need to have any experience in the area where you are appointed to. Doesn't matter. You can be in the cabinet. You could know nothing about energy policy. In fact, you could even say, hey, I'm going to get rid of the energy department and forget the name of the energy department and be named, that's right, the Secretary of Energy. Still has to be confirmed. That would be Governor Perry, who, by the way, now becomes, he has taken over Jeff Sessions' place as the most anti-LGBT prospective member of the cabinet. So congratulations, Governor Perry. Congratulations to us all. Can we do some happy news? Some happy news and also some alcohol news. Jack Daniel's is one of 200 businesses who have joined a coalition against LGBT discrimination in Tennessee. The whiskey giant was one of many businesses in and around Nashville to sign up to a pledge which vows to resist discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. The city is known for being the home of some of the world's best known country music stars and also apparently some incredible alcohol. The warning shot, as described by the Tennessean, was signed this week by a number of businesses, which also includes Country Music Television, AT&T, FedEx, and Dow. Nashville's Music Row also signed up to keep Tennessee free of LGBT discrimination. The coalition recognizes the huge amount of money tourism brings to Tennessee and the need to rid the state of discrimination in order to remain a popular tourist destination. The statement goes against moves in other states like North Carolina, of which HB2 has caused immeasurable damage, billions of dollars to the state's reputation. So some businesses being a little bit proactive there, more than a little bit, in Tennessee, including Jack Daniel's. So there are people taking actions. What is it that you guys are doing? You got to do something. How are you using your voice to make a difference? I have to, again, give a shout out to this week's guest, Rolla Selback. She is doing incredible things to use her voice to make a difference. She made that video. And by the way, you have to go watch it. Trump supporters spend a day with a Muslim. I stumbled upon it, and I know Rolla. I missed all of this. I missed the fact that she made this video, and it's been viewed almost a million times. Trump supporters spend a day with a Muslim. I'm telling you, this is the power of conversation. This is what conversation with people who are not like you can actually accomplish. There really are outcomes. So huge congratulations to all the great things that she's doing. And she's got a second one coming up. So we're going to have to check that out with apparently some gay folks there in California interacting with Muslims. I like when we do intersectionality. This is a good thing. Again, a reminder to you all, I sold my first book. So if you have 2 seconds, please stroll on over to kenschneck.com. That's kenschneck.com/seriously. kenschneck.com/seriously, and it will take you all of 2 seconds, honestly, maybe 6 seconds tops, to enter in your email address, and you will be notified when my book is ready for order this spring 2017. It's called Seriously, What Am I Doing Here? The Adventures of a Wondering and Wandering Gay Jew. I am so excited for you guys to get your hands on it. I think you're really going to like it. It's a lot of what we do on this show. It's my voice, just in written form. I can write as well. So kenschneck.com/seriously. As always, by the way, guys, if you have any ideas for guests, we are starting a whole booking season. So please, please drop me an email, 10@thisshowisogay.com with any and all ideas that you have for guests. It might not be people that we've heard of. I like local folks who are doing incredible things to lift up the voices of our LGBTQ and ally brothers and sisters, whoever it might be. Just send me an email, ken@thisshowisogay.com. Always follow us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook. Just type in This Show Is So Gay on Twitter. We come right up. That's our handle. And of course, on Facebook, we're right there. We are going to be entering into a new year, and we're so excited to do all these great things with you. We still do have a couple episodes left for this year and some really exciting guests. So I'm excited for you guys to listen. I love your support. Please keep on listening. I thank you for that. So, as always, I implore you at the end of each episode, get out there. Go use your voice to make a difference for your LGBTQ brothers and sisters. And while you're out there using your voice, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?